From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, a look at the outworking of the Founding Fathers' faith and its impact on America. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. I hope you had a great 4th of July on Thursday, and today we're going to take a look at the very things you tune into this program for: faith, family, and freedom, and how the Founding Fathers' decisions impact us today. First up, we're going to hear from Eric Metaxas. Eric is a best-selling author and lecturer at large at the King's College in New York City. FRC President Tony Perkins wanted to talk to Eric about his new book, If You Can Keep It, The Forgotten Promise of American Liberty. Here's Tony Perkins.
Eric, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tony. And nothing is closer to my heart than this subject. My book, If You Can Keep It, really was the culmination of a discovery I made not too many years ago. I was reading a book by our friend Oz Guinness, and I was simply staggered and ashamed that I didn't really understand the link between faith and freedom. In other words, I'm all about freedom. I'm pro-freedom. I'm pro-Christian. I'm pro-faith. But I didn't understand the link. And then I realized that the founders saw that there was no way to have American-style self-government unless you have virtue and unless you have vibrant faith in America. But of course, the paradox is that the faith can't be forced. And so it's this beautiful idea that Oz Guinness calls the golden triangle of freedom, mm-hmm. that freedom requires virtue, virtue requires faith, and faith in turn requires freedom. You have to have religious liberty. And it's such a magical idea. And so I put it at the center of my book, If You Can Keep It. And I thought, I just want to spend the rest of my life spreading this idea to Americans, because it is the most beautiful connection between Christian faith and the freedom that we all hold dear. It's not some coincidence that those of us who love liberty also love the God who's the author of liberty. So it really is something very close to my heart. And of course, this time of year, I talk about it any chance I get.
Well, and it's essential. And you mentioned Oz Guinness. Oz is actually traveling in Europe. I wanted to get him on today as well to talk about his latest book, which really, you know, kind of takes yours to the next step, where he does the comparison between the French Revolution and the American Revolution,
right,
which to me is just so profound, because and I don't want to talk about his book, but those principles, and they're in yours as well. But the fact that the left really today is pursuing the French type of freedom.
Yeah, the French Revolution leads to bloodbath. It leads to anarchy in the streets. It leads to Antifa. It leads to every kind of madness, a fake egalitarianism that becomes socialism, that becomes state control, and lack of freedom. I mean, it's just so clear. And unless you understand how American liberty works, you can't possibly keep it. Franklin, you know, leaving the Constitutional Convention in 1787, was asked by a Mrs. Powell, "Dr. Franklin, what have you given us, a monarchy or a republic?" And he says, "A republic, madam, if you can keep it," meaning that you, the people, we, the people, must keep the republic. It doesn't keep itself. There's no system where you flick the switch and then you can go off and it continues. We, the people, have to do the work of governing ourselves. And if we don't do it, someone will govern us. We will be governed by a bloated federal bureaucracy. We will be governed by a tyrant. Someone will govern us if we don't govern ourselves. And it's sort of this magical, beautiful idea in history, and we've ceased to teach it. We've ceased to understand it. So I wrote my book, If You Can Keep It, saying that we have got to get back to understanding this. And when you understand it, it leads to all kinds of other stuff. In other words, you begin thinking of ideas of how you can keep it and what you can do to help your kids understand it and celebrate freedom and all that kind of stuff. So I obviously get excited, because I feel like there is no second America. You know, it's like if we cease to keep the republic, it's not like somebody else is going to come in. You know, you're going to get China. You're going to get the opposite of what we have. And so we have been given a sacred charge, a holy charge by God. And if we don't keep it, it goes out. That's it, you know. And so I have to say that we really are living at a crucial time in history. I think the Lord is looking to his people to be the church, because when the church is the church, freedom will flourish. So it's an exciting idea, and of course I'm very hopeful, otherwise I wouldn't have written the book.
Well, I often talk about it in these terms that the republic requires participation. Having a republic is not a spectator sport, and I think too many Christians are standing on the side, and if we're not engaged, we can very well lose the republic. And you made that point. You know, we were both kind of in the last election cycle. We were watching with interest as Donald Trump emerged. And then, of course, when it came down to a choice between him and Hillary Clinton and our personal capacities, we made that choice. But there have been those that have been criticizing, even recently as we're looking into the next election, Christians getting involved in supporting a candidate who more clearly aligns with biblical principles and policies when it comes to their office.
I mean, I understand why they say that, right? I mean, we're not idiots here, okay? It's not like Tony Perkins and Eric Metaxas would say, you know what? All that Bible stuff, the heck with it. We want political power. So suddenly, adultery is not such a bad thing, or talking nastily about women or something. We haven't changed one bit. This is a political calculation. It's that we have a choice between two candidates, and you cannot keep your hands dirty. You'll never vote for Jesus. He will never run for president. And so you're going to have to vote for a sinner, a dirty sinner. Some are more overt in their sin than others, but every time we've got to make a choice. And when people behave as though they don't have to make a choice, I think, whom are they kidding? When did we have people voted for John F. Kennedy? He brought prostitutes into the White House. We don't take his face off of the 50-cent coin. We don't change JFK Airport. We say, hey, you know, whatever. Everybody has problems, but we look at him in a different way. He was killed, and we revere him. There's so many people whose names, we look at. We are looking at this president, at Trump right now, in a way that no one has ever been scrutinized.
Well, part of it, I think, is because, a large part of it, is because of his policies. Eric, we're up against a break. I want you to hold on because we want to come back and finish this conversation. Folks, Eric Metaxas is my guest. We're going to continue this conversation on the other side of the break, so don't go anywhere. You hear me? Don't go anywhere. Unless you want to go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, going to be back right after this.
Did you know that babies survive failed abortions? Sadly, many of these babies are denied their human right to life and are allowed to die. Currently, there is no federal criminal statute in place to protect these babies after they are born alive. Congress and state legislatures across the country have responded by putting forth legislation to protect infants who survive abortion. However, leftist politicians have blocked efforts in Congress and in state legislatures to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which requires that life-saving medical care be given to babies born alive after failed abortion attempts. We must decide as a country where we stand on the issue of infanticide, to either pursue humane protections for those most vulnerable in our society, or continue to subject innocent human life to the whims of abortionists. For more information, visit frc.org/bornalive.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. In our first segment, FRC President Tony Perkins was talking with author Eric Metaxas about his book, If You Can Keep It, The Forgotten Promise of American Liberty. Here's Tony as he continues that conversation.
Let me finish that thought there as you were talking about, you know, that there's no one perfect that's ever been on the ballot, and there's this kind of new standard that's emerged that is being applied to Donald Trump and the fact that evangelicals have been supportive of him.
Well, I mean, listen, it all gets very funny, right? I mean, do I align in terms of my personality more with Mike Pence? Of course I do. But Mike Pence didn't win the nomination. There are all kinds of people that didn't win the nomination. So when somebody wins the nomination, you've got to figure out what is the right thing to do. Now,
Let me stop you right there, because that's a difficult thing to do. That requires us to think, to pray, and to act. And not to be in some kind of pre-programmed mode of saying, well, this person has done this, therefore I'm just going to sit on the sidelines.
Tony, it requires us to get our hands dirty. This is the issue, is that if you're so prideful that you say, like, oh, I would never vote for so-and-so, you have to say, wait a second. This is not about you. This is about the future of America and the future of freedom. And if you care about poor kids 20 years from now, you're going to have to suck it up and make a choice. And you may have to vote for somebody you really don't like Donald Trump maybe. But you know what? If you don't, and so many Christians didn't, you allow Hillary Clinton or whoever it is to take power. And if you are so myopic that you don't think that it matters, I'm here to tell you, folks, you have to open your eyes. You have to understand that we are at a tipping point in America. We could lose so many of the things, the freedoms that we have today. People talk about, you know, rolling back Roe v. Wade. It's going to take us back to the 1950s. Let me tell you something. We could go way past that, you know, back to the 1750s, where we no longer have American-style freedom. We have to understand these things can be reversed. The Constitution has never been in peril the way it is today. You've got plenty lawyers, plenty judges who don't have an original view of the Constitution, who think the founders were all wrong, who would be happy to grant abortion on demand into the ninth month to birth, who would be happy to grant transgender rights to the point that women are ruled out of existence, and on and on and on. People act as though all of this is fictional, this is in the future, it's fear-mongering. David French wrote an article at the Time Magazine website recently attacking me by name, but attacking all Christians who would, you know, go so far as to support the president. And I think to myself, my goodness, what have we come to when you can't support a flawed man? Nixon was flawed, but McGovern, you know, wanted to take us down a socialist road. Every person we vote for is flawed, but we have to make a decision. And I really think this idea that I can keep my hands clean, there were plenty Germans who refused to get in the plot against Hitler. They said, I'm not going to get political. I'm going to keep my hands clean. And it's almost like saying that my purity is more important than the Jews who are going in boxcars to Treblinka and Auschwitz. And you have to at some point say, God calls you to get your hands dirty. He got his hands dirty when he came to this sin-soaked earth. He came, born in a stable in blood. I mean, this is the God that we worship. He says, I stoop and I get dirty because I love you. And the idea that we can be sort of holy and above the fray and pure, it ends up being a Pharisaical view of things. We thank the Lord that, oh, thank you, Lord, that I'm not like those sinners, you know, and I want to be pure. It's not about our purity. And I think that some of us have lost our view on this, and we have to fight for the freedoms that we have. There were many Minutemen and others who lost their lives 240-something years ago for freedom. And there's some people who would have said, oh, I think killing is wrong. I wouldn't pick up a musket. I wouldn't fight King George. Let it go. I'm not on that page. First of all, I don't think it's biblical. I don't think that's biblical. And right now we're in a battle. A lot of people in the church, they're not understanding this, and we can lose it all. The church has to be the church. We have to understand that God is the one who calls us to politics. Wilberforce was called to politics. Many have been called to politics. They would have rather been, you know, praying in a nice, clean church, but sometimes the Lord calls us to fight for his purposes in history, and I do think that's where we are now.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And getting our hands dirty does not mean that we are compromising biblical truth. It means that we are taking the risk of people misunderstanding what we do.
That happened to Bonhoeffer. Plenty of his Christian friends thought, what is wrong with him? He's gotten political. He's, you know, a double agent. What is he doing? And he thought, you know what, I answer to an audience of one. I answer to God. God is my judge, and I'm going to do what I think he calls me to do. And I don't like being called names by Christians. I don't like when David French says that I'm motivated by fear, or that anybody like you or me, that we're motivated by fear, that we're going to lose power. I know that's not true. But at the same time, I have to do what I know is right.
That's right.
But it does sadden me that we have Christians and conservatives who seem to rather, you know, let things go down in flames and hope that, you know, 40 years from now we can recover if we're pure enough right now. I don't quite get that.
I don't think that's possible. Eric, I would love to sit here and talk all night because I wanted to unpack more about the triangle because virtue and faith are under attack, putting liberty at risk. But we're out of time. You know what that means. Thanks so much, my friend, for joining us.
God bless you. Thanks, Tony.
You can find out more about Eric Metaxas when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
Today, military personnel are at greater risk than ever of suffering from a mental health condition. On average, 21 active and retired military members take their own lives every day. Richard Gleaston, a military and veteran advocate in the area of mental health, recently shared evidence that faith-based solutions can help stop this crisis. Here's what Richard had to say.
There's new science out that they watch people while they're praying or have a religious relationship. The frontal part of their brain, if I'm correct in remembering what they told me, it strengthens it. It reduces depression, reduces anxiety and stress while you're doing it. So not only did God give us prayer as a way to alleviate our spirit, it also alleviates our mind and our bodies. Our bodies react in a positive way to a faith-based relationship.
Visit frc.org/speakers to hear more.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. One of the things we here at FRC are always on the lookout for are those times when religion in the public square is under attack. But these sorts of attacks fly directly in the face of the historical record. Joining FRC President Tony Perkins to talk about how the Bible played a crucial role in the development of America's government is Dr. Daniel Dreisbach, author of Reading the Bible with the Founding Fathers.
Dr. Dreisbach, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, earlier this week, you may have heard when Nike pulled a special 4th of July shoe that would honor Betsy Ross for creating the original American flag. You know, we're seeing patriotism, we're seeing religious freedom, all of these things under attack. But quite frankly, in my view, I see it's unraveling the very fabric of America. And many people, quite frankly, don't understand how important these things are to our republic.
You're absolutely right. You know, this is a nation we celebrate this week, the Declaration of Independence. This is one of our founding documents, and it's a document that presupposes a creator God. In fact, the presence of a creator is absolutely essential to the vital points that this document makes. And perhaps one of the greatest statements in our political literature, we have these words, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. And then it goes on in the next line, next paragraph, to say that they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. And so the idea that our rights are derived from a divine source and absolutely essential to this political system that was created at the end of the 18th century and has served us so well, and yet we see vital aspects of it being threatened in our own time.
Now, we hear a lot today about separation of church and state. I mean, actually, you know, it's been going on for about, really, it's been for the last two or three decades. I mean, that is the cry of the left. In the Founding Fathers, we're told the Founding Fathers wanted to separate religion from public life. What role did the Founding Fathers believe religion should play in public and civic life in America?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question, and let's go right to the very beginning. The very first Continental Congress that met in Philadelphia in September of 1774, their very first substantive act was to call for a minister to come and lead this Congress in prayer and Bible reading. There they were, meeting in Carpenter's Hall, and there are wonderful reports and accounts from those who were present that this was a profoundly moving event. They read aloud Psalm 35. And so from the very beginning, this was a political cause, a political movement that thought that, that prayer and Bible reading played a vital role. We are celebrating this week the Declaration of Independence on July 4th, 1776. But let me remind you that in the afternoon of July 4th on that year, the Continental Congress formed a committee of three men made up of John Adams, Benjamin Franklin, and Thomas Jefferson, and charged them with the task of designing a great seal for the United States. And they went away for a few weeks, and they came up with a plan, and their plan was an image of Moses standing on the banks of the Red Sea with his arm extended, and we see the waters parting, allowing for escape from Egyptian bondage by the children of Israel, a sign of profound divine intervention, divine providence. And they thought that was a fitting image for a great seal for this new nation. Now, as it turned out, the Congress adjourned before they voted on that. But think about that. Adams, Franklin, and Jefferson thought that was a fitting portrayal. By the way, it also included a pillar of a cloud leading them, of course, mm-hmm. which we read about in Exodus, which was that great signpost of the divine leading the children of Israel. And, and let me just mention one other event that's pertinent to this week. On July 4th, 1787, the Constitutional Convention was meeting in Independence Hall there in Philadelphia. And what did they do? On that day, they thought it was appropriate for them to march down the street a few blocks. They were led in procession by George Washington, where they had, again, a prayer service. So those individuals who were so intimately involved in founding the Republic and leading this nation in its earliest days, they could not imagine, it seems to me, taking these important actions and steps without seeking divine intervention and prayer and supplication to the divine.
Well, when you read their speeches, their statements, they are, I mean, interwoven are scripture references, references to God. You see it throughout all of their statements. So somehow to say that, you know, this was not important, they did not see this as a part of public life, is just not an accurate read of history.
That's right. I mean, there is no literary or political source that is cited more frequently in the political literature of the American founding than the Bible. It pervades the literature of that age. So you find frequent citations and references to political texts. For example, here's just one example. They frequently turn to Exodus 18:21 when thinking about what kind of leaders do we need. And you may recall this is a text when Moses' father-in-law comes to him and gives him advice on what kind of leaders to lead the children of Israel. And he says, find able men, men who love truth, hate covetousness. And the founding generation made frequent recurrence to that text when thinking about what kind of leaders do we need as a nation. Benjamin Franklin cited that specific biblical text in the debates in the Constitutional Convention when they were debating what kind of leaders do we want to attract to public life, to public service.
So that fact, Dr. Dreisbach, raises the question, this question, what happened? Where did we go wrong? Where did it go off the rails?
Well, you know, I think there's a lot of things that are at play here. You know, I think part of this the predicament that we find ourselves in is partly we haven't taught ourselves history. We haven't studied our history. You know, when we read the story of the children of Israel in the Old Testament, there's constant counseling. Remember the story of your fathers, because we as frail human beings are so quick so quick to forget, great blessings from heaven. That is the story of history. It was a story of the children of Israel. You remember how quickly they forgot mm-hmm. the divine deliverance from Egyptian bondage. And I think we suffer from that same problem. We have not studied our history. We've ignored our history. Now, you add to that, we increasingly live in a culture that has a certain animosity towards the Christian faith, towards the Bible, and they are always looking for opportunities to diminish or denigrate that role in history. We've even found courts, as you noted earlier, who are very happy to participate in the stripping of public life, public spaces, of evidences of that heritage that we once enjoyed.
Yeah, I was just talking earlier in the program, we were talking with Eric McTaxis and discussing, the golden triangle that Oz Guinness talks about, where you've got liberty is contingent upon, is one of the sides contingent upon virtue and truth, as he pointed out, in virtue and faith, rather. And those two things, virtue and faith, are under attack, and the very liberty that we enjoy and that we desire is at risk as we see increasingly this rejection of virtue and faith.
Yes. You know, I don't think you'd find a dissenting voice in the founding era who would not embrace this idea that religion nurtures virtue and morality that are essential to Republican self-government. And so this statement was made perhaps most famously and most succinctly by George Washington in his farewell address, one of the great speeches of American history. And at the time, the line that was most remembered from that speech is a line that goes something like this. He said, "Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports." Now, we oftentimes skip over the very next line in that speech. He then goes on to say, "In vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars of human happiness." It's a stunning statement. He says, if you're laboring to undermine the pillars of religion and morality that hold up this regime of self-government, you can't call yourself a patriot.
Right. It is
that
an amazing statement.
That tells you how seriously he took this role of religion and morality in this grand experiment in Republican self-government that our founders embarked on 243 years ago this week.
That's why these conversations are so important. Dr. Dreisbach, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for coming on today and look forward to having another conversation about what I think is fundamentally important to America's future.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.